this episode, we're going to be talking about the glass collection that is on display at the Jacobite Clans exhibition at Perth Museum and Art Gallery. Now, for those of you who have been along to the exhibition, you'll notice this display is absolutely massive, and there is quite a key bit of significance to glassware and Jacobites. So, Nicola, are you able to kind of elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, the glassware is absolutely stunning, and it's been beautifully displayed by the team as well. I love the way that it's lit, so you see right through the glass and see all the emblems and things that are on them, so it's really lovely. We're really pleased with that aspect. It's on loan from William Grant and Son Distillers, and they're the owners of what's called the Drambuie Collection, and the glass is part of that whole collection, so we're really delighted that they are our partners and that we have this amazing collection on display. It's a big collection overall, and we had a lot of discussion on which pieces to choose. There are so many, it's stunning, but we wanted it to have an impact, and the design of the exhibition, as I say, really shows it off to advantage.
So with this glass then, who made it? The Jacobites, did they create it for themselves, or was it some other thing that happened?
Well, it's a fascinating subject, really. I believe that those who made Jacobite glass, it's not an area I have expertise in, but I believe that those who made Jacobite glass are still, they're pretty obscure people, and that there were only around 5 engravers working around the time of 1740. There was an idea that most of the glass was produced after Culloden, and that would have been from around the 1750s and 60s onwards, and that these were all commemorative pieces or nostalgic because the last hopes of a Stuart resurgence had failed. But dating the glass was something that took into account an increased currency of certain glass after an Excise Act in 1745. Experts also thought that the emblems used on the glass were taken from medals, which were created in the 1750s. But these ideas are apparently now less popular. Research suggests that the mottos and slogans in support of a cause usually appear when the success or failure of that cause is in the balance. So the thinking is that the glass was actually produced in the years maybe either side of the 1745 uprising, which really narrows it down and makes it a wee bit earlier than people thought. Technically, there's a style of working glass and enamel for twisted stems, which is not seen in any Jacobite glass, and this became common in 1747. So with that glass, that type of glass not being included, they're able to sort of really date that. They reckon that the Jacobite glass making ceased around 1747, so this does kind of place it right around Culloden. And also the idea that this was an item that had a function as propaganda rather than a nostalgic commemorative item supports the idea of the timing. So that's kind of a rough idea of when it was made.
Okay, so I mean, when you see the glass itself, like, it is, it's absolutely stunning, and the detail's amazing. So who used it? Was it sort of Jacobite revolutionaries, Jacobite soldiers, or was it the wealthy, like?
Yeah. I mean, if you come and see the exhibition, you will see the really lovely pieces. And the glasses are all different. There's small wine glasses for toasting, and they all have different names. There's firing glasses, there's finger bowls, there's huge glasses that are clearly for sort of ceremonial use. And these would have been made for Jacobite clubs and societies, and that's something I was learning more about. And in doing that, I found this group called the Glass Circle, or it was originally called the Circle of Glass Collectors. Now, this group started around 1937, and they were a group which explores and researches all kinds of glassware, not just Jacobite stuff, but all over the field. So they did a lot of work on finding out about Jacobite clubs. And obviously, the clubs and societies were secret, so it's not very easy to find out about them. But it's thought that at one point there were around 150 Jacobite clubs all over the country, but only 13 of these were in Scotland, and of the 13, only 9 were in Edinburgh. So
that's a bit mad. I just naturally would have assumed that all Jacobites would have been Scots. So yeah. Why were there so many clubs in England?
Well, there's many reasons people were Jacobites. And of course, Jacobites could be Scots, English, Irish, French. You know, there's a great... it was surprising to me that so few of the societies seemed to be in Scotland. But yes, the clubs were mostly in England. And the people who made the glass appear to have lived and worked in London. There's some really excellent work on this in a gorgeous book by a man called Geoffrey Seddon. I call it a gorgeous book because it's full of beautiful pictures of glass as well as what he's written. And he's done a lot of work on the glass, and in particular looking at the engraving techniques and styles. So his work has led him to conclude that there were just a small number of engravers, and you could tell them through their work and individual style, although I don't believe he could always put a name to them. So he, in the book, he refers to them as Engraver 1 and Engraver 2.
So when these Jacobite clubs kind of got together, what did they do? Did they chat and drink, just reminisce?
I suppose the clue's in the product, yeah. There's a lot of glasses in there for drinking and making solemn toasts. So Jacobite clubs and societies had glassware which was used to toast the king or the water, and that's quite a famous aspect as well. Toasts were given over a bowl of water on the table, and this would obviously show your Jacobite allegiance. Now, at the time, it was a serious offence to toast the king over the water in this way. So people did this in private. If they wanted to make a toast publicly, people did it in a concealed way by passing their glass over water in a bowl or another glass. And I believe at one point, finger bowls were banned on dining tables in public places, so that people could not raise their glass in toasting the actual king, because they were secretly toasting, they were passing their glass over the water. And obviously they could make the toast in good faith, because to themselves they were toasting the king over the water. So so there's lots of drinking, and toasts were just another way that Jacobites sort of showed their loyalty.
So if they were kind of discreetly toasting, I mean, obviously the physical, you're having the finger bowls and that's getting banned, so what sort of examples would there be of how they would do a toast?
Well, there's other great examples of toasts, and you might just get, apparently you got abbreviations, God help James, so you would just put the abbreviations. QRS meant quickly resolve Stuart, and my favourite one is TUVW. Can you guess what that one is? Truss up, vile Whigs. So that's kind of another way of being anti-establishment. My other favourite is a reference to the health of Sorrel. Sorrel was apparently the horse that King William was riding when he had an accident which preceded his death. The horse stumbled in a molehill, and King William broke his collarbone, which seems to have led to a string of events. He died of pneumonia, but the collarbone being broken, and then he travelled somewhere else. He had the bone reset when he arrived, and he wasn't very well, and it all led to all kinds of things, and that's what eventually led to his death. So another toast around that incident is made by Jacobites, and it's probably one of my favourites again, is to the gentleman in the black velvet waistcoat, and that's referring to the mole.
That's absolutely brilliant.
It's good, isn't it?
It's quite good. Yeah. So, and again, when we look at the glassware, and for those of you who have been along to the exhibition and you've seen it, there are some extremely intricate patterns on the glass, and a lot of these are kind of symbols, that's my understanding. And so, Nicola, is there what's the kind of reasoning behind that?
Well, again, the symbols on the glass, you know, and found engraved, you're right, they're absolutely gorgeous. The most obvious ones that you will see are the rose and the rosebuds. And the rose itself signifies the king, James, and the rosebuds signify the heir. So people would obviously wear roses and rosebuds and all kinds of things too, but if you see them all together, it's most common, and it features heavily in paintings, and it's referred to in songs and poems too. The White Rose of June is a very famous Jacobite song. Portraits of the Stuarts, particularly Bonnie Prince Charlie, can also be found in the glass. You know, little miniature portraits in the glass, quite intricate work, it's amazing. And there are lots of other symbols such as stars and initials, and these are found alongside flowers and moths and butterflies. But sometimes the meaning for these images, these little emblems, are more obscure. Oak leaves and things like that were there, and they're associated with other kings, apparently. And many have suggested there's an element of rebirth being promoted through those kinds of emblems. Another school of thought is that the emblems are not as complex as we think and are simply the decoration of the glass, and they don't really have any hidden meaning. I went to a lecture actually on Jacobite glass just before this exhibition opened, just out of interest to see what the chap said, and he didn't read a lot into some of the flowers and symbols. He thought those were just added elements, but some are definitely there.
Yeah. And then, like, obviously they're trying to be kind of subtle about how they're kind of toasting the Jacobites, and we talk a lot about like the imagery and the symbols used. Was there any like phrases, any wording on the glasses at all?
Yeah, some of the glass we have on display, you'll see there's some Latin words engraved, and there's a Latin word redeat, meaning may he return, and fiat, meaning amen, or may it be so, and these commonly appear. And sometimes there's whole phrases and other words as well, so they've all got these kinds of meanings. And again, you can look these up in some of the writing. As I say, Geoffrey Seddon's book's excellent, and there's other places to find them. There's a very famous Amen glass which sold for £66,000 in 1991. Now, the author, yeah, I know, wow, it's amazing. 66 grand, quite stunning. The author of the book on glass, Geoffrey Seddon, kind of asks, why would a glass like that command such a price? Because in this case, the glass isn't exactly rare. They know of at least 35 other Amen glasses. There's a very particular design on those. You can again look those up. But Seddon believes that there are two reasons for the popularity and collectors paying big money prices for Jacobite pieces. He thinks that the history in the piece is enough to support a continued interest. The exhibition itself here in Perth, well, we're enjoying record numbers, which shows the ongoing popularity of the subject on this, and looking at things for a more local level and getting to the heart of clans. So Jacobite interest continues, but there is another reason. Well, it's the mystery, I think, the mystery of the glass. I think because Geoffrey Seddon himself has done all this work and even he can't figure out who owned it, who used it, and what the original stories around some of the pieces were. They've done a huge amount of literature on it. I mean, you can find out from some pieces exactly what the provenance is, who's had them, which is, again, stunning. But it is still something, for a lot of Jacobite pieces, it's something that's difficult to pin down. We can't really know the exact origin, or maybe sometimes the engraver. So then the mystery can grow. Many people own very old glasses with very basic marks, scratches almost, made of very basic engraving, and there have been some wonderful forgeries too. Seddon really points that out too, that glass may be made at a later date that merely emulates originals. So it's not easy to know if you have something valuable or something fake, and I think that's quite interesting as well, like auction or something coming up. So the ones that they do know a lot about are very pricey because they have that history, but maybe there's other pieces in there that are a wee bit less easy to. So Seddon himself thinks it's the mystery that appeals to people. The not knowing just provides an ever-present fascination for glass collectors, for historians, for the family historian, the genealogist, and of course all those Jacobite enthusiasts.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating, and who knew that glass could tell so many different stories as well. So for those of you who haven't visited it yet, Jacobite Clans is on at Perth Museum and Art Gallery until October 26. Admission is free, and you can find out more information on our website, www.culturepk.org.uk.